This is Their Life Story Podcast with Robin Levine. I have always believed that everybody has something to teach all of us. In this series of interviews, I will talk to all types of people in order to learn from and be inspired by them and their life stories. This week's episode is with Mike Medikoff and Damian Vince, co-founders of Change Toothpaste. Change Toothpaste is a toothpaste that comes in palette form instead of having to use a tube. And after looking it up, I've realized that it's about 1.5 billion toothpaste tubes a year that get sent to landfills globally. It was really cool talking to Damian and Mike about how they're starting their company, playing off each other's strengths, working well as a team, and avoiding a lot of common mistakes by using their life experience.
Mike and Damian, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, you bet. My first question is, how do you guys know each other?
Damian, you want to take that one?
Oh, sure. So,
can we tell them about the hot tub or just...
Yeah, we don't really know how long ago it was, but somewhere in that 8 to 10 years ago, we met through a mutual acquaintance, and I had been working for a gentleman, and Mike knew him through a poker group that they were together with, and I had been playing poker. So we had met at that poker group when the two sort of met together, and then basically acquaintances for a couple of years. And then one year we did a poker and ski trip out to Big White, and we spent a weekend there with a handful of guys, half a dozen. And one afternoon we happened to be sitting in a hot tub for a couple of hours, and we just talked for a couple of hours, got to know each other. And then from there it was, we still played poker. And then we did, we worked together at one point for a short period of time. And then basically grew into another business opportunity that we had tried. And then from there we started Change Toothpaste.
So you guys have done some business ideas before.
Just one. We had we were looking at doing a bathroom, sustainable bathroom business, where, you know, much like we have today, a refillery idea. 2 years ago, there wasn't anything in Edmonton that was like that, and we had started with a sustainable bath bomb product that was manufactured here in Alberta, and we knew the owners, so we took that on because they have no retail outlet. We thought maybe we could help that channel, and then we built on that idea to say, well, maybe a retail store that would focus on sustainability in the bathroom in the home might be of value to our community. And then from there we were looking for products, and that led us to the toothpaste tablet idea.
Oh.
Investigating that, we try to find somebody who's going to wholesale it to us so that we could sell it in our store. And we're met with, you know, roadblock after roadblock. And we went kind of, well, how hard can it be? And it's not very easy, but that's the path we chose.
I read on your website last night that the recipe that you're using now was like the 119th or like over 100 times.
Yeah.
Before.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We have tasted every recipe. And there are a lot of bad recipes we tried.
Are some of them, like some of the ones that didn't make the cut, were they like gross, or did they like clump together and just feel weird in your mouth? Or
they were just disgusting. We tried one formulation that we both cringe at, and it was made with stevia. And
yeah.
It, let's just say stevia does not make a good toothpaste.
No.
Yeah, I think they make gum out of stevia, and I don't even like that gum.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a natural sweetener, and we thought it would work really well with what we were trying to accomplish. And I think I still have the bitter aftertaste in my mouth.
Yeah.
A year later, right?
when we started making toothpaste, we had two mandates. One, it had to work and taste like toothpaste, because if it doesn't work and taste like toothpaste, nobody's going to use it. Just because it's sustainable does not mean people are just going to jump on it. And the second mandate was it had to be non-habit changing. So we worked very hard on getting the flavor profile before we did anything. So we got that flavor where we wanted it, so it tasted and worked just like toothpaste. And then from there, we made the tablet. So we didn't have we did have some clumping problems, but it was long before we even thought about making a tablet, because we start with powder, right? So everything's dry and you mix it all together. And then once we had the flavor where we wanted it, our next step was to make the tablet. And that was really the easiest part of everything, was throwing it through a machine. We did have some troubles with the machine that we originally started with. It's very finicky, let's say, but we've since upgraded and got more, more reliable equipment. So
probably would have thrown the tablet machine through the wall, except it's too heavy to throw.
Did you ever get to a point where you thought it wasn't going to work, or were you always just like, we're just not quite there, we're not quite there?
I think Damien was more optimistic, not with the recipe, but with the actual tableting machine, because there were so many times it was so frustrating because, we don't know what we're doing, right? We got to a point where it's like, should we just take this recipe to a manufacturer who can make a tablet? But we knew we were, and then we'd have a breakthrough, and then everything would reset, and then we'd start over again and be okay. And then it would just, because it was all this machine that we got was, basically the early entry model of an automatic one, not just a hand press one. And a lot of moving parts, and I think I found it more challenging than Damien, because he's got more of a mechanical mind, so he could see how the gears and everything worked, and I'm looking at it going, it should just work, but it doesn't really work that way.
Yeah, and there's nothing that you can just buy off the shelf, right? Like, if you went to you can't just go to Home Depot and say, hey, I want to make toothpaste tablets. What do I need to do that? So it's all figured out on our end, and lots of research and lots of late nights, and just figure it out as we went along.
So has this company been good for your guys' friendship, or has it been hard on it at times?
COVID's been harder than anything on it. We were together quite frequently before COVID hit, and all of the manufacturing is done by Mike. So we take all the precautions to keep him safe, so that, I work a full-time job and Mike works this. I don't want to be putting our business at risk. So so he does all the manufacturing, I do everything else on the other ends. And then we work together basically every day remotely. It hasn't really taken a toll. I mean, there's all the challenges of running a business and getting on the same page, but it's been pretty good.
Well, we weren't really friends to begin with. We just tried to each other get his money, right?
When you guys first came up with the idea that you're like, okay, we're going to make toothpaste, it's too hard to find, when you wanted your store, is this where you wanted to be, or are you kind of not satisfied and you want to take it further?
Never satisfied. Never, always growing, right? We launched our product in July of 2019. We took our first sale on July 27th. We did farmers markets, and we always had online. So our website was always there. We were always taking orders there. We always had this plan to grow the business organically and take every advantage that we possibly can. And late in the year of 2019, we took advantage of an ATB booster campaign, which is our local treasury branch, Alberta Treasury Branch. They have a Kickstarter campaign that they offer to local small businesses. And we joined up with that, and we launched. We'd always planned to do that ever since sort of March, I think, is when we first planned to apply there. But then our product wasn't ready, and one of the things that we didn't want to do was launch a campaign when the product wasn't ready, because there's nothing worse than pre-ordering a product and having to wait 6 to 12 months to get it. And you're always sitting there questioning whether you're going to get it or not. So we started selling with a viable product in July. We launched our Kickstarter campaign in early November. We completed that in early December, and we shipped all the products out the day it closed. We had, pretty close to all when it closed. We had the formulation, we had the product ready to go. We actually ran out of ingredients at that point because we had sold way more than we ever expected. And then during that campaign, we actually did some media with a PR firm that we hired. And that firm got us into the local Edmonton Journal here. That journal article over the next week went national. We ended up with orders right across Canada. And then that article was again picked up by the a media outlet in the US, and we ended up on the Flipboard app on the iPhone. So we had way more orders coming through than we had ever really expected. It allowed us to buy better equipment. It allowed us to buy more packaging and more ingredients and really grow the business. So from that point on, we launched our new flavor in February of last year, cinnamon. And then we were able to launch the third flavor, bubblegum, right before Christmas last year. So during the time of COVID, we were able to grow from one SKU, essentially one product, to two different sizes and three flavors.
Congratulations, you guys. It's been a journey already.
It has been, and it's not stopping. So this year we're moving into a new facility. We're going to get more space. So right now we operate out of 200 square feet.
Yep.
And we're moving into 1,200 glorious square feet at the end of the month.
I'm not going to know what to do with old space.
You're going to be able to put desks in there and objects that you like to class it up.
Mike's going to get his steps in.
Oh, yeah, you're going to get your steps in.
Yes, and so we're moving into that in March. With that new space comes the opportunity to take the next step to the regulated fluoride perspective. So we're hoping that the new space and the regulations will meet all those regulations, and we'll be able to do fluoride this year.
So fingers crossed. So it's the reason you guys don't have fluoride in so far is because it's the regulations to get it in. Like, that's not just an ingredient you can just throw in. Like, there's a lot of hoops to jump through before you can just put fluoride in something in your product.
Yeah. Adding the fluoride is actually the easiest part. It's all the Health Canada regulations that we have to walk through.
I was wondering what the hurdles were that you guys were coming up against. Is that the kind of the bigger one? One of the bigger ones?
Yeah, I always like to explain it that so our toothpaste is also regulated. It's Health Canada has regulations on manufacturing cosmetics, which is what toothpaste is considered without fluoride. So when we work through all of those regulations to be a cosmetic, it's pretty straightforward. All the information is available online. You follow the rules, the regulations, you put your processes in place, and you can manufacture. The rules and regulations are all set out for adding fluoride as well. And what we were reading through there, the information is also available online to read through, but it's available on the Justice website in Canada. So it's not just Health Canada regulating it. It's like the full force of the law, because sodium fluoride is a drug, right? So we don't want to put people at risk by just putting fluoride into a product and hoping it's okay. So we have to meet strict regulation guidelines that we have to work through. We have to be licensed to produce it, and we have to be licensed to sell it.
Wow. I didn't realize that it was seen as a drug. I've never heard of anyone using fluoride as a drug.
Right. Yeah.
I knew you could get fluoride poisoning if you had too much.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Why do you guys care about the environment? What is it about the environment that really speaks to you guys that you want to protect?
Well, caring about the environment is something I got to tell you, Robin, like, I'm 55. My parents, right? Like, we were born in the East, and when growing up, they did their recycling. They did the stuff that parents of that generation did, right? Without, you know, because you're self-centered as a little kid, and, you know, nothing about the environment really means a lot except when someone talks about saving a turtle, right? When you're in school, stuff like that. It was, you know, so growing up, we did our little things, but nothing major. It was only after I had kids did things start. What things that they got involved in, that's what sort of precipitated all of this in a way that they made me do better, right? And because, you know, when my daughter, who's 17 now, so she was 15 at the time when she brought this to me, you know, everything was a cause. Everything was, you know, we aren't doing this properly. We aren't doing this properly. And, you know, we try and we try to do better here and do better there. And, you know, like she goes, we need to start composting, Dad. And I'm like, okay, let's see what that looks like. Right. So now in our backyard, we have 5 composters and we have 11 different containers that we grow our own food in. But the biggest obstacle is Edmonton. We have a 5-6 month growing season. Right. So we try to freeze stuff but our climate really, you know, only works well for this type of thing for a short period of time, right? Unlike, you know, living on the West Coast, right?
Yeah, we could grow pretty much all year, especially if you have a greenhouse.
Right. Like we shut down 4 of our composts because they don't work in the winter, right? We have one, like a mass one that we just keep filling up throughout the winter, but it's not going to really start working until the spring, right? Until heat is generated. Cause right now it's all covered in snow. Right.
Wow. So, yeah. That's a whole nother reality for me. Right. Too cold to compost.
So when my daughter brought the idea of the tablets to my attention, cause there was a company in the out of California who was making them. And she goes, you know, what can we bring these in? Can we try them? Oh, sure. We can try them. I didn't even know there was a problem with what the hell is a tablet? And she's like, well, there's a problem with the tube. The tubes aren't recyclable. And I wasn't even aware, you know, you squeeze out the last little bit and then you'd either try to wash it out, which was impossible. So it'd either go, you know, into recycling, which is, you know, you hope something goes into recycling and it gets recycled, and that's called aspirational recycling. So you do that, or it goes right into the garbage, right? And so we order these tablets in, and, you know, a 1 month sample of these tablets, they took 11 weeks to get here.
From that's California. A long time to wait to brush your teeth.
Well, that's the thing, right? It's like, so we're not allowed to brush our teeth until the tablets come, right? But so 11 weeks, and the landed cost for a month worth was $29. And so I explained to her going, you know, sustainability is important, but it still has to be affordable or no one's going to buy in, because it's easier not to think about it and go buy the $3 tube at London Drugs, right? So while we were waiting, this is when Damien and I were doing the other bath products thing, right? Because we thought, well, this would be a really good connection with what we wanted to do, right? And so I even contacted that company. I said, well, you seem to have a distribution problem. What if we become distributors for in Canada for you, right? Because you have a decent product and we like what you're doing. And they weren't interested. They were basically over their heads with production, that they couldn't meet the demand, which is why it took so long to get here. And so I explained this to my daughter and she's like, well, how about let's make our own? And that was the light bulb idea. Going, wow. Well, okay, let me give Damien a call. See, is this something? Do you think this is something? And then it just sort of went from there. And it was, you know, so we started, we joke about it, right? Because we started, okay, with the recipes. What are all the ingredients in natural toothpaste and what are all the ingredients in commercial toothpaste? We took all that to our dentist and said, what do we need and what don't we need? And it's amazing how much stuff in commercial toothpaste shouldn't be in your mouth.
I really noticed using your guys' toothpaste how, like, you know, when you how there's no chemical taste. Like, you know, how when you brush your teeth, like if you eat a strawberry after it, it's just like really gross because it's like the two different flavors. Like, I feel like you could eat anything after this. Like, your mouth doesn't really taste weird, which is like it takes getting used to that it doesn't taste like chemical toothpaste after.
Well, and the biggest issue with the paste is that it has to stay in a paste form. So they have to put so many chemicals in there because of the moisture content and the bacteria that grows. So many of the ingredients prevent bad things from happening to their paste, right? Because of the shelf life. Whereas, well, if you don't put bad ingredients in, and because we don't have any moisture as well, right? That we don't need to keep things from keeping it moist, except, you know, our packaging has to stop moisture from entering the tablets, because then if moisture got in there, they'd be kind of mushy, right, after a little while.
I think that I didn't realize it until last night, and I saw on your website, and it was like you can take them through the airport, and I was like, whoa, I've thrown out so many tubes of toothpaste, and I'd feel so bad because I'm wasting it, and then you have to buy new stuff when you get to wherever you're going.
Right.
That's like a big win right there.
Yeah, traveling with the toothpaste is one of the biggest things. I mean, biggest struggle we have right now is we can't travel, but it is an option.
Yeah. Do you think you want to expand into like more zero waste types of products?
I think right now we're going to stick with the toothpaste. We are a toothpaste manufacturer first and foremost, right? We do all the manufacturing ourselves. We are becoming experts at what we do. That's our goal. We added toothbrushes to our mix because it's a good pairing for the toothpaste. You know, I would love to manufacture more things, but that changes everything that we currently do. We're getting good at making toothpaste very quickly, and that's what we want to continue to focus on. Like I said earlier, the fluoride's the big next step, and then once we have that, then we can decide what to do from there.
When we first started talking about the toothpaste, and it was, okay, so when this gets to a point where we're content with it, it was actually, you know, we thought about body washes and shampoo bars and all of these things, but it's amazing how time consuming doing one product properly just sort of puts everything else on the back burner, because you can't get to this point until you complete this stuff. And doing one thing right versus dabbling in a lot of other things just to launch them, it, you know, it's not where our company's vision is. We want to be the best toothpaste tablet on the market.
Are you guys the Canadian, like the main Canadian brand already for tablets?
We're not the only Canadian brand, but we would consider ourselves the Canadian brand.
Yeah.
we weren't the first on the market. We don't pretend that that was our idea. We are the second, from what I know, the second Canadian toothpaste tablet manufacturer. Lush has been doing it the longest, I think. They're a UK company, but they have a pretty large presence in Canada. So they've been doing toothpaste tablets for a while. Like Mike mentioned, we found that one out of the US in California. There's one in Nelson, BC that we know of.
Oh.
And now there's a bunch popped up. There's a handful over in the UK that are already doing fluoride, different regulations out there. One in the US that's doing fluoride and a couple of other ones that are sitting in the same boat we are, which is natural and working through the process.
I know that when we started, it had to be, there's no point in making a tablet that is similar to every other tablet. So our goal was to make a better tablet, one that actually people like using, and not just because it's sustainable, but because it's toothpaste.
Yeah.
Right? And simple as that.
How did you guys come up with the name? Because I think the name is like amazing. And the logo.
When we were brainstorming on things, we never even talked about a name, right? It was just, we knew we had to figure out something that was going to work. And all we kept talking about was our biggest goal is going to be changing habits, right? And we don't want to change someone's habit, right? Change just kept coming. It just kept appearing everywhere. And then one day it was like, well, why don't we name it this, right? And then, you know, we wrote kind of a pitch all the way around it, and it worked, right? And yeah, it just sort of, yeah.
I think it's brilliant. It's absolutely perfect.
We believe that one small change can have a big environmental impact. That was one of the things that we've been talking about since the beginning. And we don't need to have a million people doing sustainability perfectly. We need a million people doing it imperfectly, and making small changes can have a big impact. You can get overwhelmed with all of the things that you think about in the world, and one step at a time and make a small change. So that's kind of how the name really stuck.
Yeah, it's great. I have a question for you, Mike. Okay. Is your daughter involved in the company now?
Well, she's still in high school, right? So she will, the packaging that you have, that's our brand new packaging. Before that, we used to hand stamp craft packages.
I like that.
So yeah, until you have to stamp thousands of them, Robin. And stamp front, back, and two on the back, right?
Oh, man. And
each package was stamped three different times. And so I would get her to do the stamping, at a nominal kid rate, right? Child labor. And so there are plans for our children in whatever capacity they would like to be in. Because, bottom line is we're building this for them, right? But as I talk to my daughter about this, it's okay, you still need to go to school. You still need to be able to contribute somehow other than just filling up pouches, right? As the daughter of a co-founder, you need to be someone who understands how the business completely works, but you also need to be able to contribute somehow, because any employee that we hire along the way needs to be able to prove their worth, not just someone who wants to sit in the mailroom, right? You need to be able to contribute in whatever way you choose, but you still need to be able to contribute for this to be part of your company, right? Damien, do you have those talks with your girls?
A little bit. I don't have any interest in pushing them towards doing something in change if they're not interested in it. But they have to bring that value, because everything that we've done so far is what we've done, right? Like, this didn't just happen overnight because we pushed a button to put toothpaste up for sale. There's long thought gone into a lot of things, and 45 years of experience here and over 50 with Mike is gone a long way for what we've done so far. So I wouldn't hire anybody off the street to do something because they think they want to. Experience has to have that, or education, one of those two things. So just because they're part of the family doesn't give them an automatic in with what we're doing. I'd love everybody to sort of take it over, but it all depends on what value they bring to growing this, because this isn't just a company making toothpaste. This is a brand and values and a business aspect to everything. This is a global toothpaste domination world that we're in.
Yeah, it seems like there'd be a lot of competition, because really toothpaste is probably a big business. So the tube toothpaste companies probably don't like all you tablet guys, hey? Can you feel that?
No, there's no pushback from any large companies. And I don't know, I'm sure they're aware of companies like ours, or even ours. The reality is when you walk into a grocery store and have the option to buy $3 or $5 tube of toothpaste, that you know how long it's going to last, because that's how you've been doing it for 35 years. It's pretty hard to change somebody overnight to a different way of doing things, and then a price point that is slightly more expensive than your average tube. So until major changes happen in the economy for sustainability, it's going to be a harder thing for us to acquire all of those customers.
Yeah, that's a good point. Speaking of your guys' life experience before this, Damien, you're an IT guy as well, still?
Still, yeah. Well, kind of. I've done IT since I was 18, pretty much. I got to school, did a little bit of that, and basically worked in the technology world for most of my adult life. Doing that sort of work has led me to some logistics and operational work. All the technology stuff is still what I do.
That must really help for this too, hey?
And that was how we started. I mean, I understand that e-commerce world and the technology aspect is really quite natural for me. So researching and learning how all that world works was stuff I've dabbled with over the last 15 years. So putting together a website was pretty simple, and then putting together all the technology to accept credit card payments, pretty simple. And, I don't want to make light of how easy it was for me, but a lot of hard work over 15 years to figure it all out today.
Yeah, totally. But what an advantage going in, because like you might not have had the confidence to do this without that.
Or having to figure somebody, hire somebody would have cost more money. Then you always have those troubles of getting somebody who's on the same page you are. And then even further than that, there's lots of e-commerce sites out there. Even a Canadian owned Shopify is something, but the costs are really high and really easy barrier for people to get into selling online. But to do it right and to do it the way we wanted it, I was able to do that ourselves.
Wow, it's really inspiring.
And to align myself with someone who has an incredible skill set like Damien has made my departments that much easier to deal with, right? Because I could go out and learn all the stuff Damien does and apply them, but I don't have to because Damien does that, right? And I couldn't imagine how much more difficult. Like you wouldn't put toothpaste in an e-commerce category, but I have to tell you, the amount of the technical side of this that there is overwhelming for someone who I thought I had pretty good basic skills, but there's no way I could have done any of this without hiring someone to do it for me, right? Because the amount of years to learn how to do it, I never would have got the business off the ground.
Wow, what a good partnership.
It's always about surrounding yourself with someone smarter than you.
Yeah, that's my main thing I have going for me in life is just good people around me. That's my biggest asset. Were you a massage therapist before this, Mike?
That was a long time ago. You're going back in the 90s. I've had a lot of different vocations. Started out as an animal health technologist through a degree at SATE, and then my wife now moved to Edmonton from Calgary to go to law school. Then I followed her up because there was just outgrew Calgary. There's only so many bars you can go to, right? And then came up here, went into business and sales with my family as a sales rep for 11 different companies, and then decided it wasn't something that I wanted to keep doing with my family. Went to school as a massage therapist, did that for 14 years, and then became a stay-at-home dad for the three kids for 8 years.
And, oh, wow.
Yeah, and then went back to school to become a travel consultant, and I did that for another 8 years. And my timing on exiting everything was just seemed to work out really well. Really enjoyed travel, did a lot of traveling, and just, it's all about sales and service, right? And got out of the industry when the industry started changing. That's when I was like, you know what? I'm working too hard, not making enough money because they kept the suppliers, kept cutting commissions, and it was just not something I wanted to continue to be a part of because the value wasn't there. Everyone, it was interesting. Everyone goes, well, I can do the same thing you do on the internet. And it's like, probably, but not as well, right? And so the internet was actually my biggest, not even competition, but it was my biggest ally because there's so much information. People couldn't sort out what they were doing. You know, I'm not talking a trip to Mexico for a week, but, you know, a month tour through Europe. You can't do that on the internet, right? But it's interesting leaving that industry, and the colleagues that I have during COVID times, the travel industry was decimated, right? And, you know, I don't know if you know how a travel agent works, but basically you put a whole trip together, everything is booked, and you don't get paid any commission from any of the tour operators until the trip is completed.
So, oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so the colleagues that I have who are still in the industry, they'd be working on major trips for years with clients. Like we're talking, you know, a $50,000 Africa safari trip, right? That you book 2 years in advance through these tour operators. And COVID happens, everything gets canceled, and they're out money for all of the work that they've done. They don't see a penny of it.
Right? Wow, I never knew that.
Oh, yeah.
You got out, you just happened to get out like right before that.
Just happened because the way the industry was going, I didn't want to be a part of it anymore because I'm wise enough to know that my time is valuable and I shouldn't be working so hard for less money, right? No. As you get older and you get more experience, well, I shouldn't be working 12 hours a day anymore because I'm efficiencies, right? It's just like, you know, making tablets. I make tablets in the dark now because I know exactly what I'm doing all the time and the packaging and everything. So I'm way more efficient. So I'm not working 14 hours throughout the night. Even Damien, I'm still working 14 hours. Just right, because the efficiencies are there, right? And the processes are there. So I feel so badly for my colleagues that are still in the industry, because now 2 years worth of work, it's all dried up. And you really don't see it coming back anytime soon, right? Because of this pandemic, right?
What a change.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of being wise, what have you guys learned from the last couple of years on your journey of getting to here?
Well, I know for me, the biggest supporter has been my family, right? Because without their support, like, how do you go from, making a very comfortable living to starting a business where you don't even know if it's a viable business, right? Like when we, you know, after 6 months of development of the 119 bad toothpaste recipes,
yeah,
launching at a farmer's market, giving out samples just to see if there's enough interest, right? And that was the thing. Most people, Damien, how many people at the farmer's market did we talk to that had no clue that toothpaste tubes were even an issue, right? So like hundreds of people, and it's news to them, right? And so we knew we were going to spend so much time educating people that that this was an issue, that yeah, this is how you solve the issue, by buying our pouch for $9, right? And so who knows how long that's going to take to become a viable business where we actually make a salary out of it, right? So that the support from the family is the one, basically the thing that's gotten me through this is, and I know we have something here, right? There's no doubt, but the exposure and getting that out to people and the importance of it, there's the other side. And then people have to like it. They have to want to try it. So they also have to have some sort of recognition that the tube, even we're not even talking about sustainability as a category. We're talking about one item has to be important enough to them to want to try it, right? And that takes time. And you need support from family and friends and colleagues to be able to get through all of that, to get to the point where it's like, holy crap, we do have something here.
What about you, Damien?
I knew business was tough. I've worked for myself for a period of time, and I know the effort that goes in is really related to how much you get out of it. The thing that I think I never really expected was no matter how many times you say things or how many times you put it on the website or how many times you explain it on social media, how many times you talk about it in person or out of person or anywhere, there are still people who just want the answer without having to look for it.
Interesting.
You know, it's not a negative by any means, because any engagement is good engagement, right? We, you know, somebody asked, we have fluoride in our toothpaste. Well, that I couldn't say that any more times than I have, and no, the answer's still no, right? But people don't look, people don't read, and it's interesting, because I manage most of the social media and the conversations with customers, and yeah, they just people just want the answer. They don't want to look for it.
That's a really interesting find, discovery.
and I joke about it with some PR people that we have on our team, and they said, if you can figure out how to get people to know to read before they ask the question, we'd make a fortune. Because nobody can, right? No matter how much every organization has that same problem. What do you do? How do you do it? What is good for me? And what can I do to get it, right? Like, They just want the answers. They want the service. They want that aspect of it. And no matter how much technology we put in place, people still like talking to people.
There's got to be an upside to that, instead of not just a frustrating side, where like maybe you can hit the road and talk about it and hand out samples, and then it'll just like domino, you know.
Possibly, yeah. Yeah, we like talking about it. I we can tell the story. We've been doing it for a couple of years now, so it's fun to talk about it and get people educated.
Have you guys met other entrepreneurs such as yourselves that are doing similar things that are really inspiring to you?
You know, we have a handful of companies here in Edmonton that are focused on sustainability in the manufacturing as well. We have... I call her friend for sure. She makes zero waste shampoo bars. So she's got rid of that plastic bottle that comes with tubes. So you use it like a bar. And then we have some, you know, a soap company here in town is doing the same thing. They're doing zero waste soap. And there's lots of people focused on it. And then every one of our retail stores that buy our toothpaste to sell in their store are all really focused on that sustainability aspect. So the world's changing and people are liking where things are going. With more and more options every day, it becomes easier and easier to adopt.
Does this feel like a really fulfilling path for you guys now that you're like, you feel like you're making a change and that you've kind of, you know, you've done something to put the world in the right direction, like you're doing your part?
Doing a part, there's always more, right? I think that there's always more. This is just one aspect of our lives that we're trying to help other people make a difference as things come about. And we're always learning and we're trying new ways of doing things. We would love to be doing more and we take every advantage that we can, but it's good. It's a good feeling to know that, you know, we've reduced the landfills by a little bit. you just want to be able to do it more.
Does it feel like you have the momentum to really build now?
Like Mike said, we have something. It feels like we have something. You know, we're not a multi-million dollar business by any means. It's paying some wages a little bit, and not by the hour by any means. But we're a small business. We started through a pandemic, really. You know, we're a year and a half old from a sales perspective, and we're gonna keep doing it, and we're gonna find new ways to get in front of more people, because our goal is that plastic pollution reduction, right? It isn't about the toothpaste. It's not about the sales. It's about helping people understand that there are little things that they can do, whether they choose our path or somebody else's, that it gets them thinking about new ways of being sustainable in their own life.
I think it's perfect. And I just like, there's got to be just like hundreds of thousands or millions of people just like me that just hate throwing away the tube. How many employees do you guys have so far?
You're looking at them.
Oh, okay.
You got the entire company.
I bet you in a year from now, it'll be a lot different. Like, I think you guys are really just starting to really get going.
We hope so.
Well, moving into the new facility, it doesn't do anything for production, but it allows processes to be put in place. And then when fluoride becomes a reality, right, we expect, because right now, you know, we figure there's about a split, 55%, 45% for people who want fluoride versus who don't want fluoride. So right now we're doing really well with the non-fluoride people.
Right.
But there's a whole 55% of the market that is untapped for us. So once fluoride is added, that's, you know, it's going to be a very large game changer for us. And hopefully, even with organic growth, that we'll need to hire people to help, right? And to get us to the next levels.
This is really exciting. Oh, yeah. Soon there'll be big change ads on the internet.
Other than just Facebook, right?
it'd be really neat to have it be a household name. Everybody that I've told has been like excited about it and been like, where do I get it? Like, no one's like, oh, that sounds, one person was like, but does it work? And then everybody else was like, oh, that sounds great. I'm like, you're like, where do I find it?
What did you think after you said you got your packages, right?
Yeah, I love the toothpaste. The one honest thing that I thought is that it's a smaller amount of paste. That's the one thing that really stuck with me, is that it's just so much less. But then I thought, maybe I'm just always using too much, and now I can regulate how much I use. So you're using the same time waste, and you're probably wasting toothpaste in the tube anyway.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was the thing that really struck me. It was like how little toothpaste is in there.
So what's,
and the only amount you need.
Yeah.
It's not like you felt less clean when you were done.
No, they felt just as clean. But then, then the second big thing was that you don't have a bunch of weird taste in your mouth. Like, you just have a clean mouth. It's almost like hard to wrap your head around from your whole life of brushing with like a really kind of overpowering toothpaste.
Yeah. Well, I remember at the beginning when we talked about taking all of the ingredients to a dentist, the size of the tablet is the recommended dental dosage.
So everyone, like, because I don't know anybody that has like everybody must just like goop on their whole toothbrush. You know, you like fill your toothbrush. So everyone must just use way more, and then you're just wasting it anyway.
Well, how much paste do you find after you brush with normal paste? How much of it do you find in the sink when you're done?
Yeah, like half of it, and sometimes the whole thing falls off your toothbrush anyway, and then you have to put it. Have to put it back on anyway.
Think about, after the small dose that you get with our tablet, there's no mess left in the sink.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, totally. That's a good point.
Yeah, especially with kids. There's so much cleaning that has to be done after kids use toothpaste that it's not there with our tablet.
It kind of just makes you think of all the little changes we could make in life, you know, like if that's like feels like a pretty big change, just like not having a tube of toothpaste. And then like, what else are we doing like inefficiently and wastefully, you know? There's probably probably a ton of other good ideas out there waiting to be done.
Yeah, I heard one today. You go to the grocery store and you need to buy one onion. How many times do you put that one onion in a little bag so that you can go through the checkout with it? You don't need to. You're pulling the skin off anyway, right? So
yeah,
just little things that you don't think about because it's human nature. It's what we've been doing for years.
I know. I remember just growing up and I wasn't really thinking about the environment so much, but like the status quo is like you do things a certain way and when you're young, you kind of assume that it must be the right way if that's why we're doing them and you like buy into it. And then after a while, you're like, that was a pretty dumb way to do things. How come everyone's doing this without questioning it? And then some people like you come along and we're like, no, we can do it a better way. And now maybe this will be the way, you know?
And it doesn't necessarily need to be a better way. It could just be a different way.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be the way that we've seen. Like there, it's not a perfect, like the toothpaste tube isn't perfect. Yeah. But that reminds me. So instead of the tube, you have the package and it's all compostable, the package. Yeah. And it looks like plastic. Why don't we use that stuff in way more situations?
Yeah, because it's not cheap, right?
Okay, right.
Manufacturing something plastic is way easier and way cheaper. Compostable packaging is new. It's still not perfect. Some compostable packages need different environments to really do well in. Our packages are both recyclable and compostable. So if there is no compost facility in your area, there's still options for you if there's recycling. The reality is that over the next 5 to 10 years, we're going to see huge improvements in sustainability packaging, and we're going to see costs come way down, and we're going to see, you know, the ability to sell toothpaste tablets at a $3 a month
product,
right? But until that time, we're doing the best that we can, and we're encouraging other businesses to think the way they're doing it too.
Yeah, that's great. You guys are the Patagonia of toothpaste.
Well, you just can't send them back to us for us to repair them.
No, I don't think I'd ever send it back. What does a typical day look like for you guys?
Okay. Work and sleep.
How much detail do you need?
I was just kind of curious, like, are you like putting in like long days and you're pressing tablets and mixing ingredients together and
packaging them? Typical day, I'll make two batches. Okay. So one batch, I'll go through ingredients. They make 6,500 grams, which is what? 14,000 tablets.
Wow.
Per batch. So I'll make two batches a day. Package probably half of them and then send out all the orders within 24 hours.
Wow. How do you not get stressed out when you have like orders to get that have to get out?
Process.
It's all the process, right? The orders are the primary concern, right? Like I'd like to have enough tablets and back stock that anytime a retail or a wholesale order comes in, that it doesn't matter how much they need, they're ready, right? So that was, you know, our initial mandate is we need every order to go out within 24 hours of receiving the order, right? And so far in a year and a half, we've achieved that. Knock on wood that we don't have machines breaking down or anything like that. Because that's the biggest thing is so far we haven't had any obstacles to prevent us from producing.
Wow, it sounds like it's going really smooth.
Yeah, we planned it pretty well.
What's funny, Robin, is the really smooth, that I believe comes from our combined years of experience. We know where the priorities are. We know where the effort needs to be, right? And on how to make a business a viable one. And you don't get that when you're both starting out at 22.
No, it would be really easy to find reasons to be mad at the other person in a joint venture like this. But you guys seem like you're a really like well-suited team and you don't seem like you have any reasons to be mad at each other.
Well, let's not get carried away with that. But, you know, the biggest thing is good at communicating with each other, right? Like we've known each other for a long time, but we haven't been like best of friends talking every day. And even when we play poker together, you know, there's not a lot of conversations at a poker table.
Yeah, you just,
because you're interrupted by the next hand, right?
You're just trying not to lose all your money.
That's right.
Okay, guys, I really need to get going. I got this next thing. I got to get in there early. So I appreciate everything with you, Robin. And
I appreciate you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much. And I can't wait to put this out. So you guys did some fundraising. Like, was money like a big obstacle at the start?
So remember when Damien talked about the ATB booster?
Yeah.
That was okay. So when we both started, we had no idea really how much money launching this company was going to take, right? Because we didn't know how much all of it is relative to revenue, right? So we both put in a small amount of money to start. We were able to resource the ingredients that we needed. We bought everything really small just to make sure that we were able to develop the recipe in the tablet. And then we would see what would happen after that. So we did it all on a shoestring budget because it's hard to invest like 20. It's not like we said, okay, we got $25,000 each to put into this, right? It was a much smaller amount. And if we need to put more, well, we'll determine it at that stage because we don't know how much we need to make a viable, sustainable business. And then, so we both put in the same amount of money. And how long can we live off of this money? Right. And then these opportunities started presenting themselves like ATB. I'm not sure if you're familiar with them. That's nope. our provincial bank who basically caters to small business owners. OK, and they did this Kickstarter campaign, which is ATB Booster, which is Alberta wide. Right. So it's not like a Kickstarter where it's worldwide, because we thought about doing a Kickstarter. Problem with a Kickstarter is, well, you have to fulfill worldwide orders. We don't have shipping in place. We don't have the fundamentals in place, the structure in place to be able to fulfill worldwide orders right now. So we kept it small with ATB, right? And we looked at raising $10,000, and that would get us another machine. Right. Because each one was a step.
Yeah.
And, so we were 140% successful in 30 days, which we were blown away at the support that we received. And we knew, like, as most Kickstarter programs, right, they raise the money so they can develop the program, develop the product. We already had all the product made to fulfill the order.
Yeah.
Right. So we were able to ship within 3 days, all of the orders that came in, right. Which was a huge thing. Oh, it really did. Right. And then an injection of $14,000, you know, you think about most companies, $14,000 is like their monthly payroll.
Yeah. Right?
But 14 for a starter just was able to take us to the next level. So, and during that, we ran out of product, right? Because we don't know how much we need.
I always thought that would be such a hard thing with a business. Like, I'm always like, how do you know how much to make? Like, no matter what you're selling, like, how do you know what your demand is? But like, right. I think a lot of times probably don't.
Well, and it's not like we're making a widget. We're making something that has an expiry date too, right?
Yeah. So you can't just make tons of it.
The reason we went to the new packaging is the old packaging. So we stamped the old craft package, right, which was 100% compostable, right, but it wasn't great as a compostable item. Like the craft side of it would decompose within a year. The zipper took up to 7 years.
Oh,
okay, which yes, it's still compostable and we're doing the best we can with what we have, right? But the new packaging, even though, and we know we haven't done a formal media launch on the new packaging yet, but because it looks like plastic, every person on social media is like, why did you switch to plastic?
Oh my God.
We know we have to do a complete media campaign about the compostability, but the whole package breaks down in under a year, including.
Yeah, so it's better for composting, but it doesn't look better.
It's the people's perception of things, right? So just to finish off the fundraising thing, so that allowed us to get more packages in, figure out the ones we need, right? And all the steps along, and it just, it's all worked out really well that we haven't had to put any more money in.
Wow.
From the initial investment.
That's amazing.
To be able to bootstrap a startup is, you know, we have 18 people on an investor list right now that keep wanting, when you need money, come to us first.
And right? You haven't used them yet.
We haven't used anybody yet. We've been so fortunate, Robin, right? Wow. That because, and this comes back to like our core values about, it's not about the business. It's about the values that we set in place and that we're following those values. And if you take care of the customer and you take care of their needs, the money takes care of itself.
Wow. It's amazing because a lot of startups, they just go through hell. But you guys, like, you seem like you've calculated a lot of what your moves first, and everyone's kind of behind it too. Like having investors that you don't need to use, like that's probably actually really nice to not have to worry about anybody else's money.
Well, and you know, because we wanted, like right now we have two tableting machines that put out 17,000 tablets per hour. We have two mixers. We have a counting machine now so that the tablets go into the machine and all you do is slip the package underneath and it counts out the tablets.
Oh, that's great.
And then a sealing machine. So all of that used to be done by hand.
Oh, wow.
Now the automation is kicking in, right? Because we go, okay, we need, this is the next machine we want. It does this, it costs this. Okay, here's a bank account and a percentage of every month's revenue, like if it's 2%, okay, revenue this month, 2% goes into that account. And we only buy the machine when we have the money to, or it's detrimental to helping out.
Right? Wow, you guys are really doing a great job. You're really smart about your moves. You're not making risky moves.
Well, and there's the big thing, right, is this is where I think the experience and maturity level comes down from, whereas we don't go borrow $500,000 to get every machine we need. We go, okay, what is the next piece of equipment we need, right? And let's earn the money so that we can buy that, right? So we don't carry any debt while we expand. And this is what we mean by growing organically, right? Like we could go raise $500,000, get a facility, plunk all the equipment in there, hire people to run it, and then try to get sales to cover that, right? But we've gone the reverse way. It's like, okay, let's grow organically by following our value systems, and the growth will fund the company.
That's a great investment model. But what if sales picked up so much that you were losing money by not having the equipment?
Well, that would be a fantastic problem to have.
It would. It would.
So right now we know, I know exactly how much I can produce every day. Okay. If sales got to the point where I'm outside of my scope of ability, well, then we just buy another machine. Because if the sales outgrew our capacity, well, the revenue in coming in, well, we just keep adding more machines, right?
Wow. I'm really excited to see what happens in the next year or two.
Well, we're really, really excited about it. Moving out of the 200 square feet that we've been in for the year and a half. Like if you think about what 200 square feet is, right?
Not that much.
We're in
20 by 10.
Yeah. We're in 2 10 by 10 bedrooms right now.
right.
Because one of the things that we were both aware of, moving into a facility doesn't increase revenue. It only increases expenses.
Oh yeah, it totally. Yeah. It's not cheaper. It's more expensive.
Right. And
your revenue has to go up to afford it.
Right. And when we started the idea, the concept of moving into a bigger space, it was, let's just be as uncomfortable where we are as long as we possibly can. Right. And only until we have to move, do we move. And going through the regulatory process of adding fluoride, one of the requirements is a full Health Canada site inspection. And the facility that we're producing in right now, it would never pass. Not because we're not following Canada Health regulations or the guidelines. It's just because they don't deem this to be a facility.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, thanks so much, Mike. It's been really, really nice.
Okay, awesome. Take care.
Bye. See you. Yeah, take care. Bye.
Thanks a lot for listening to this episode of Their Life Story. That was Mike Medikoff and Damian Vents of Change Toothpaste. My next guest, I'm super excited to announce, is Mark Perry from Smithers, BC. Anyone from the Bulkley Valley knows Mark. He's an amazing performer, an even better storyteller, and just an example of like a well-lived life and an amazing guy. I want to give a special thanks to Adam Dibb for the amazing intro and outro song. Every time I listen to it, I just think to myself how talented he is and how grateful I am for it. Thank you.